Hey everybody, we're The Evidence.
And you're checking out The Grind with Stacey Steele.
Hey, thanks for tuning in to a new volume of The Grind, number 157. This is Chris, taking a brief break from my summer hibernation to bring you a feature volume on some good friends of ours here at The Grind. Calgary's The Evidence. Growing up in Calgary, I spent many a Friday or Saturday night in the late 90s and early 2000s checking out the various musical endeavors of the three guys in The Evidence. And I'm happy to see that the trio's third album, As The Evidence, is being released next week with a show in Calgary and one in Edmonton. And they've got some great bands on the bills for those shows as well. More details on all of that during Stacey Steele's conversation with Casey, Tyler, and Dean, recorded last month. Before we get into today's show, just a quick note on what and when our next volume will be. Friday the 13th, we'll see volume 158 hit the web, with an interview with Belgian punk rockers FOD, conducted by Marcus while the band was touring Ontario and Quebec in support of their Ontario release earlier this year. We will also hear an interview with another Calgary band who has a new album coming out in the coming weeks, Cron Goblin. And along with those chats, we'll have some From the Mailbox artists in the mix once again. On now to some brand new music from The Evidence, coming off of their forthcoming release, Potential. The band once again worked with director Douglas Thompson for a couple videos for songs off the album, and this is one of those songs. The first single off the album, Lies.
Action!
welcome to The Grind on Punk Rock Radio. This is Stacey Steele, and today I'm catching up with Calgary locals The Evidence. How are you gentlemen this evening?
Fantastic. Oh, good. Thank you.
Awesome. And just because no one else is in the studio with us today, please tell us your names and what you do in the band.
I'm Casey. I play drums and sing.
My name is Dean. I play the bass guitar and sing.
My name is Tyler. I play the guitar and sing.
Well, we've interviewed you guys quite a number of times. It's a pleasure this evening to come into your studio space and catch you just after your rehearsal. So thank you for letting me be a part of this evening.
Thank you.
And thank you for the little present. They gave me a gift of coffee, which totally made my day today.
It's a gift that keeps on giving.
First off, I want to say congratulations for myself, Chris Burnside, and the rest of the Grind crew on the upcoming release of Potential. We're really proud to see another fantastic album being born from some of the most amazing musicians in Canada, and excited to sit with you guys this evening. So,
thank you.
It's been really good.
That's hard praise to live up to, I think. We do our best.
First off, when is the potential release date for Potential?
It's September 13th, Friday, September 13th. Mm-hmm. We're playing a show at Dickens Pub with the Robertson Privilege, Old Wives, and Deluge, who are friends of us all, and that's great. DJ Fat Pat will be spinning in between bands. It's going to be a hell of a night, actually.
Mm-hmm. It's going to be awesome.
Also, I guess we're playing Edmonton at the Pawn Shop on the 14th, the next night.
Are you playing with the Old Wives on that show as well?
Yeah, that's the Old Wives, The Evidence.
Living with Lions.
Oh, nice.
And another band that I forget, unfortunately.
Anyways, so yeah, that's going to be a good show.
We apologize for that.
We should look that up.
Mm-hmm. Two really good evenings, absolutely.
I think it should be available on iTunes by then.
Yeah.
All of the local avenues, hopefully in some local stores, and the usual. So if you can't make it out on September 13th, we don't hate you. We mildly dislike you, but you can get the record elsewhere.
Well, I'm going to be there with bells on, so.
Well, I didn't mean you. I meant the them out there in Radioland.
Yes, absolutely. And that's in Calgary at Dickens Pub.
Friday the 13th
and the 14th in Edmonton at the Pawn Shop. You guys have put a lot of sweat and hard work into this album. I've listened to it a few times over the past week and a half. Tell us a little bit about how Potential differs from your previous releases, Polarity and Currents. Who wants to start that one? Dean?
It's harder to play. I think this record, the whole effort's been just marked by a higher degree of all the sauce that we put in before. But we're older and wiser and working harder for what we're after now. So when these songs started to come together, we were even more deliberate than before. And we talked to a lot of bands on the road and things like that that are often trying to move in the opposite direction and trying to capture something quick and energetic. And that's good. That's their thing. But we had things we wanted to accomplish with this record, so we took longer to do that. And when I listen back to our older stuff, it feels like we've come a long way. And I'm just trying to be honest about it. It feels like we're getting better. And that feels good.
I think, like, in general, we've always been perfectionists. We've always sort of sought to be a better band, to be better writers, to be better craftsmen in general. And in the past, that's, I guess, sort of benchmarked itself in the most obvious possible way, where it's like we just want to play well and we want to sing well and we want to write good songs. But in this particular instance, we really did. I mean, I know it's kind of a cliche. Bands say it all the time that they push themselves further, but we really did. Like, I personally pushed myself right to the brink of insanity. Like, there were moments where I was literally, like, you know, like collapsing on the floor in just like total exhaustion and total dissatisfaction with what was going on with my own stuff. And I feel like this record is like a culmination of that kind of like self-pressure to get better, pressure to craft better music. We found inspiration in a lot of our influences for that, particularly with the vocals. Like, we all really love Queen, so mm-hmm. with the vocals, everything was done in a very Queen style, in that we each, you know, took a very strong role in vocal harmonies, and there was a lot of layering of those vocal harmonies, and I think it's resulted in a like a vocal sound that we've never been able to achieve before, and so I'm very happy for that. And we did it all without the use of like tuning or harmony generation. Like, it was all just singing.
Mm-hmm.
So that feels good.
Absentees.
I noticed there was a little bit of a different sound, especially with the singing, and then a lot of the songs had a lot more depth, not that the first two albums didn't, mm-hmm. but it was definitely on a different curve than what I expected, and I was actually quite pleasantly surprised with it, especially with the way that you layered it this time, and with the way that your vocals sounded a little bit different. I really, really liked it a lot, actually. Well,
thank you. We definitely went all out. That's for sure. I mean, I know that Tyler had a lot of music over the last few years that was just sort of like building up and building up and building up, and he was able to really go through all of that stuff and find, you know, only the best pieces, only the best songs. The basic, like, ideas of the music definitely came from Tyler, I think. I think he's probably responsible for 70% of the riffs on the record, for sure. And
the interesting thing about that, too, I was thinking the other day, is that most of the stuff that I picked and chose that I liked best was stuff that the idea originated on tour, mm-hmm. where a lot of the time before was stuff that originated in my bedroom.
Watching Star Trek,
you know, like, it's a different environment, and I don't know if you can tell or if it's changed anything about the way that the riffs go or the bass and guitar work, but a lot of it was
while you're on the road,
yeah, which I think is kind of interesting.
Do you think some of the places that you visited or other bands that you befriended or became, that you were in contact with or played with, do you think that played a little bit of an influence on some of the things you're playing around with while you were doing that?
Yeah, also a lot of driving, so a lot of listening to music, maybe a little more listening to music than in my daily life at home, so maybe influenced by, because like the variety of stuff that we listen to when we're in the van, just the three of us, is pretty notable.
Pretty diverse.
Yeah. I've always felt that music's kind of a language, so in the same way that when you spend time with people, even for a short period of time, their sort of lingua franca or their lexicon becomes your lexicon. You know, you start to cull words from them and they cull words from you, like things that are very specifically them or you. And I think music's the same way. When you spend a lot of time with bands on the road, especially if you're on tour with a band, of course they're going to influence you. And of course you're going to influence them. I think you're influenced by everything you hear. So.
Totally.
I think that definitely comes as a part of it. But like always, I mean, as a band, I think we've always got kind of one foot in the future and one foot in the past. It always feels like we're kind of like straddling the present and not really in it sometimes as a band. And I think that's kind of, I don't know, in a way there's nowhere I'd rather be, because it's kind of like, you know.
It keeps you moving in no matter what direction you're leaning towards.
Yeah, I think, I don't know, maybe this is a kind of corny, but I think there's something vaguely romantic about not being of your time, you know? I mean, you know, everything old is new again, so you never know when that might change, and it's definitely not a preconceived notion that we want to stay that way. It's just kind of the way it is. And I think that's part of what makes us an interesting band, at least for me to play with, you know, these guys. I think that I'm never bored.
Mm-hmm. What keeps you guys going as a trio?
Chemistry.
You guys all have a really good chemistry and good friendship, I noticed, and I think that's really important with most bands. But what keeps you guys going? Because you guys are such an eclectic, amazing band to have done these albums, especially this past album.
Well, thank you. we have a friendship that is... it's deeper than... most bands don't get to play together as long. Mm-hmm. Because other stuff gets in the way. Petty things, or just life in general. Or they tour themselves to death, or that sort of thing. I think probably have all just had this quiet resolve to keep doing it, because we enjoy it. And over the course of 10, 11...
12
years.
we started writing songs together in August, September of 2001.
Okay.
And our first show was December 26th, 2001.
Yeah. And we have known each other since before then, but mm-hmm. hadn't really played together until
I'm with Tyler since 95 and you since 96.
Yeah. So, you know, we're brothers.
Yeah.
And so it makes it easy and enjoyable to weather all those things and
maybe
more
not
fun
maybe
to,
not easy. not always enjoyable, but you know,
yeah,
it makes it possible to weather those things. Like, yeah. if you're not invested in another person, it's hard to deal with all the bullshit, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that can happen in a band. A band is like a marriage, except with more people. It really is. If you're really, really devoted to your music, it's like having children in a way. And sometimes you can hold things a little too dear as a result, and that's when the problems start. And I think we found a way to deal with those things. Like, for example, with this record, the mixing of the record was actually kind of easy.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I mean, easy in the sense, I mean, it wasn't, the process of mixing wasn't easy, but in terms of like our, like we agreed more readily on things, mm-hmm. and things were more easily hashed out between the three of us. Whereas I remember times on earlier records where there were like bitter fights about yeah. where things should sit in the mix and how things should sound. Like bitter fights where we'd be like actually angry at each other and actually leave the room angry. And so it's a refreshing change to be at a point where those kinds of things don't matter as much. And, you know, we're all so focused in the same direction with regards to, like, getting it done that it just feels a lot more comfortable. Maybe that's just a byproduct of age.
Going back to the album Potential, why did you name it Potential? And is there an underlying theme with all the songs, the tracks that are on this album?
With our previous records as the evidence, our first record was called Polarity, and our second record was called Currents, and both of those names we started to realize had metaphorical associations with mm-hmm. concepts that were both very natural and very organic, and then very electronic and very, you know, sort of almost virtual in a way. Like polarity refers to balance principle, right? You have positive and negative. So there's a very, very Taoist idea in there that, you know, you have yin and yang and positive and negative. And just like in an electrical signal, the movement of the signal is actually, it's essentially impelled by positive and negative. It's just like a magnet, right? Mm-hmm. Positive and negative actually work together to make something happen. And so with that, when we did Currents, it was like we found that a lot of the songs on the record, by no design and just by sheer accident, had very strong water connotations. Mm-hmm. So the ideas of rivers and currents and that sort of thing sort of tied in perfectly. And we were like, well, that also has an electrical thing, because an electrical current is very much like a river, you know, flows a direction. And
with Potential, going back to what you spoke about a few minutes ago, do you think it's where you're bridging that past and that present and the future, and you're sort of at that potential where you're not quite sure where it's going to go, but you have the potential to do
that? That's it exactly. I mean, because we pushed so hard to reach that potential in the making of the record, it just seemed like a really obvious direction to go, especially since potential also has the electrical connotation, like
mm-hmm.
you know, the potential of an electrical circuit is a definitive quality, right? So in fact, one of the songs on the record is the actual technical name for electrical potential, which is point charges within a defined system.
Mm-hmm.
That's how you describe electrical potential. So the notion of like reaching your potential, and then the notion of being charged with potential, it's almost like something that impels you, right?
Mm-hmm.
If you're willing to sort of tap into your potential, then you can do remarkable things, and that's what we want to do. That's what we've always wanted to do. So I hope we've achieved that.
What's your favorite song on the new album? I'm going to ask each of you separately. I will start with Tyler.
I'd say that my favorite is a little bit, it has a lot to do with playing it. Mm-hmm. Like, my favorite song to play. It might be the same one to listen to, but my favorite one to listen to and play currently is, oh, that's hard, because the Absentees is good. I think it's 8:30, mm-hmm. for sure. It's got a great groove. I think the guitar parts work great, and the vocal harmonies ended up really, really good. It's definitely my favorite to play, so
mm-hmm.
I would say 8:30 for sure.
8:30? Mm-hmm. Dean, how about yourself?
It's also 8:30. Musically, I was in love with it when Tyler first put it on the table, like I usually am. But lyrically, it also turned out beautifully, as far as I'm concerned, and it has this sort of classic thematic element for us, which is about something we've already talked about a little bit, which is not really fitting in, something we're accustomed to and is just kind of part of our makeup. So I feel like it's fun to play, but it's also representative of who we are and who we sort of always have been, and I'm sure who we always will be. So yeah, at the moment that's it. It may change over between now and the next record, but yeah.
Awesome. Casey?
That's a tough one. I feel like 8:30 we're still on the honeymoon stage with, because it was the last one that actually came together.
Mm-hmm.
All of the other songs had vocals tracked, and 8:30 didn't even have anything written. So the last song that came together was 8:30, and it came together so quickly. When I wrote the lyrics, and I arranged the vocals, and I wrote all the harmonies, I really came at it from like almost an exhausted angle, because I was so tired and I was just barely getting through at that point. So it, for me, it really resonates, and it was the kind of the surprise of the record because of how quickly it did turn out. And again, it does speak to the alienation element that we've explored in the past. But from a very, very sort of narrow viewpoint, it's you know, sort of about high school and, you know, what it means to not fit in high school. So it's something that's close to our hearts, but, I mean, I also tried to write it. I mean, this is kind of, maybe again, corny and kind of cliche, but I try to write it from the perspective of, like, a gay kid in high school, because, like, the past year and a half has just been littered with absolutely horrible sort of human rights abuses in high schools of kids who haven't really figured themselves out yet and stuff like that. So it has a lot of pathos in it, and it sort of hit me pretty hard. But I don't know if it's my favorite. I really love a lot of this record. Really, really love a lot of this record, song-wise. So I feel like it's probably either 8:30 or Lies.
Mm-hmm.
Which is the first song on the record. Even though that one's actually kind of the oldest on the record, I still think it's a really strong song, and I still really like to play it, and it feels good to play. So I would go with Lies or 8:30, which is an almost unanimous
yeah.
for 8:30.
Speaking about lyrics, how do you guys write the lyrics, and how do you fit them into all the melodies that you all sort of bring together? You are the main lyric writer, Casey?
In the past, lyrics, like in our earliest incarnations, lyrics were a little bit more evenly spaced out. But on this record, I wrote almost all the lyrics. The song "Absentees" is a joint collaboration between Dean and I, but all the other songs on the record I wrote the lyrics for and arranged the vocals for.
Mm-hmm. How do you fit them in with the melodies that Tyler and Dean bring over to you?
It's actually always instinctive. Again, Tyler wrote most of the music on the record, again, 60%, and maybe I wrote 30% of the music and Dean wrote 10% of the music. But Dean wrote stuff that inspired Tyler and I in completely different ways. Like, he came in with, like, melodies.
Mm-hmm.
He came in and he had a melody on that he wrote on piano and played it for us, well, had recordings of it for us, and then was like, can you do anything with that? And so a lot of the music that we wrote actually came out of that. Like the song Point Charges, I wrote based on something that Dean, he had a riff and an idea, and it just sort of sprung out from that. And Absentees was one that Tyler wrote based on something that Dean wrote. So Dean had this like really, really strong thematic influence that actually helped to inspire us in a completely different way as melody writers. From a vocal standpoint, writing melodies has always been kind of a snap for songs that Tyler gives us. He's got a really strong sense of melody composition, and when it comes to arranging bass and guitar, he always treats them very separately, like as very separate instruments, whereas a lot of guitar players, songwriters, treat bass as though it's just kind of like it's something to be forgotten, kind of. Mm-hmm. You put it underneath the guitar to make it sound heavy and that's it. But especially in a trio, you have to treat each instrument as its own voice, or else you just don't really take up the same amount of space. Mm-hmm. And I treat vocals exactly the same way. Inspiration comes very easy from the songs that Tyler writes for me, and I don't find it very difficult to write parts for them. Basically, I start with melody. Sometimes I have lyrical ideas that are little more than notes.
Mm-hmm.
That's something that's relatively new. Like in the past, I used to just hear a song and then I'd start singing melodies, and then I'd find an idea in the melody that made me feel like writing lyrics, and then I'd write lyrics to the melody that I'd already written. This time I actually had some lyrical ideas,
mm-hmm.
and then I found melodies for the lyrics in the songs that Tyler wrote, and it was an enlightening and liberating process.
You're just sitting in there waiting to be heard.
You have to be inspired. So working with guys that inspire you is crucial if you want to make music that somehow resonates with you personally.
Mm-hmm. That's a good answer. I haven't seen the album artwork yet. The album artwork in the past has been done by artist Heather McLean.
No exception here.
No exception. She also did this one.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. What does the album look like? What style is this one going to be brought into?
I think, as usual, I think we gave her the album title,
mm-hmm.
and that's about it. But this time,
I gave her some lyrics.
And some lyrics.
Always,
yeah.
She always asks for some lyrics.
Mm-hmm.
Which is, yeah. And then we wanted it to be red. That was basically we give her very little direction, and she always comes up with something that's, in our opinion,
mm-hmm.
mind blowing. So, with Polarity being sort of yellowish green,
Currents
being mostly blue with elements of red, we kind of wanted this to be mostly red, and she took that.
I pictured it to be red, actually.
In a way, she kind of painted herself.
Really did.
She painted herself into the role in a way, because with Polarity, we gave her, we had more conceptual directions. Like we were like, maybe we could have some stuff like this, because it was our first one and we hadn't worked with her before, and so we kind of like had more conceptual ideas. And in the end, she just did something that was way different than anything we'd come up with, and was so unique and completely floored us. And that's a fairly big risk to take when you're doing mm-hmm. somebody's album art. I mean, if we had held the concept too dear, or the ideas that we had too dear, we could have been, you know, more stubborn about it. It was just so phenomenal, the art that she did. So like the second time around, we were just like, we want to feature this key figure that's sort of on the potential cover in a way, because she drew the art for Recurrence. There was another figure that looked very similar, and we're like, well, that must be the same figure. It's got to be the same person. That's amazing.
Mm-hmm.
It ties together. It's almost like a storyline in some way.
We never communicated this, but that was our intention, and it just happened.
Mm-hmm.
And so that was nice.
Yeah, it was very serendipitous, and I mean, it speaks to her, I don't know, depth and breadth as an artist. Like, she's just a remarkably talented individual, and so it was a no-brainer to have her come back for the third one. It was, you know, like all we had to do is say the album's called Potential, these are the lyrics, and we would like to have a predominantly red color scheme. She was off and running.
How long does it take her usually to do the art for your albums?
It's hard to say because we told her all that stuff sort of early on in the stages of us working on the record.
Mm-hmm.
And since that took such a very long time, I don't know how long it took her to conceptualize and put things together, and I couldn't say with any certainty. Mm-hmm. You'd have to ask her.
Okay.
It was ready when we were ready. That's all we needed to know.
Okay.
I think it was September of last year that she emailed us our first view at it or mm-hmm. whatever. And so we probably told her about it almost a year before that. It looks like she spent a lot of time on it, but who knows?
It's nice to be so comfortable with somebody that you can just kind of rubber stamp something like that.
Because
it's like it comes across your desk and you're like, yep, that lives up to my expectations.
Mm-hmm. You can't really see the whole thing here, but...
Oh, that looks amazing. Wow. Very cool. I can't wait to see it in the flesh, in my hands.
Yeah. Another video in the works for this one, again and again.
Free from trying in vain to please you and me. I'm tired of making lies true. Stop watching me. Watching me, good day for DC. Standing on the edge, looking for an out. Hoping for a hit, reach for a drowning in the tide as it washes out. On a wave that never reaches the shore. No, no more will I be here to kick around. I wanted peace, but just found pain. Again and again. No more, no more will my failures decorate. There's walls to guard or your disdain. No more, no more. Freeze frame, such urgency. A snapshot of love lost in a state of emergency. A cheap price but high cost. Standing by myself with a loaded gun, hoping for something to reach me. Praying to the sky, I'm not the only one. A lesson that no one could teach me. Now no, no more will I be here to kick around. I wanted peace but just found pain. Again and again. No more, no more will my failures decorate.
Questions for you guys.
Yeah.
What inspires you each on a personal level to make music and to make music in the style that you do in The Evidence? We'll start with Tyler again.
I don't really know. And I never have. It's always just been a thing that I kind of feel like I have to do. And if I don't for any extended period of time, I start getting maybe short with people, and I start becoming an asshole, maybe, and I just I become unhappy,
mm-hmm.
and I need to be basically always making demos for mm-hmm. these guys. I love giving them things, and I like having them hear it for the first time, and then watching the reaction and having it be sort of like, oh, or that's great, and like I almost feed off that a little bit. I think maybe I shouldn't be telling you guys this, but
just fuel for your fire, right?
Yeah, yeah. It's totally that, and yeah. I mean I enjoy recording music and listening to it so much, and I do it all the time, and a lot of the time I'm the only person that hears it, and I just sift through it all and give it to these guys. So I don't know if that's a very good answer, but I kind of have to, and I think I probably always will.
Dean?
Yeah, it's very much a compulsion, and it's a creative outlet that. I need mm-hmm. personally, and one that sort of facilitates. We do so much of the work ourselves in terms of the production and everything that kind of surrounds our music, the artwork and the merch and the how things are released and that sort of thing. That it's a fantastic, never-ending creative outlet. So there's always an opportunity to do more and challenge yourself and do better things, more mm-hmm. interesting things. And I'm lucky enough to play with guys that are fun to play with. Mm-hmm. They're very talented and are happy to bring me along for the ride. So, yeah, it's an opportunity that a lot of people don't get to have,
mm-hmm.
and particularly after this amount of time. Again, it's something that fundamentally is just a part of what I do. Yeah, for us, we're just lucky enough to have been at it for a while. It gets more and more fun, so harder to turn away from.
Awesome. Casey?
I once read a quote by a British theater critic. I think his name's Clive Bell. And I may misquote it here, but as I remember it, it goes, "Give the artist only the tools that they require to make their art. Make the life of the artist sufficiently undesirable so as to prevent its pursuit in any in whom the divine demon is not absolute." Basically, what that's meant to say, at least the way I interpret it, is that any kind of art, and for me especially music, is something that you have to make because it's its own reward. Like anytime you start making music for, I guess, ulterior motives, if you feel like it's a way to get rich or successful or popular, or it's a way to you know do anything other than just make music, I think you're potentially sabotaging your own future enjoyment of what you do to a certain extent. I make music because it's the only thing that makes me feel connected to the ground that I walk on and the air that I breathe. It's the only thing that makes me feel like I can relate to other people. It's the only thing that makes me feel unique or special, that I have a voice. It's the only time that I understand what people are talking about when they talk about, you know, God or, you know, the universe. When people talk about philosophical things, I feel that music is the closest that I ever come to any religious experience. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm a textbook agnostic. I have no idea what the nature of the universe is, but music makes me feel connected to it, at least. And I don't know, how could I do anything else? I mean, any time I feel like, you know, I'm barely making ends meet and I don't have any, you know, reasonable retirement plan and I can't afford decent clothes and I can't afford to go to the dentist, I try to remember that that's a small price to pay for feeling something so overwhelming. Like when you actually feel that kind of connectivity to yourself and the world around you, there's nothing quite like it, at least not for me.
Good answer.
Yeah. Maybe a little long-winded, mm-hmm. sorry about
no,
that.
No, it's totally good.
Stand up!
after this year is through, you guys are putting together a possible European tour of sorts. Are you able to speak about this a little bit? And this will be the third time, as the evidence, that you will be heading across the pond. There's a couple questions I would like to ask you after you confirm or deny this.
that's our plan. We have no specific dates or anything confirmed, but
okay.
we've been saving our pennies in the band account to make it happen.
Yeah.
Just because it's been such a remarkable experience over there, and we've seen so many things that we'd always hoped to see,
mm-hmm.
and played for people that we never would have met had we not gone there. And they're all awesome.
Yeah.
It's just an awesome place to go.
Do you find that the fans differ compared to Canada when you go over to Europe?
Canada a little bit, the States a lot.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's in no way a slight to music fans in the United States, but based on all the tours that I've done in the United States in the past, there's a definite cynicism that sort of belies the sort of adherence to music that, you know, that a fan has. In Europe, it seems so much more innocent and enthusiastic. And there's a lot, I feel, this is just based on my own observation, and of course accepting the relative limitations of language barriers, I just feel like bands and musicians are so supportive of each other over there.
Mm-hmm.
So supportive. There's never any, like, air of, like, superiority or like
entitlement.
Yeah, exactly. They're all just like, you know, we're here to play, mm-hmm. let's have a good time. The fans are like, we're here to listen, let's have a good time. And that's not to say that that doesn't happen here. It's just
art and culture is a lot different over there in music, I find.
Yeah, maybe it's contextual too. Maybe it's just like we're able to feel a little bit more special over there because we're not from there. And maybe somebody who's from, you know, a band that's from Brazil or Israel or Japan comes over here to tour feels the same way or whatever. I don't know for sure. But I do know that it's a lot of fun.
I also think as a music fan, there's a little bit of a difference. Again, like you just said, if a band from Italy was going to come here and play at Dickens Pub or something like that, I just feel like going to that might be just a little more special than going to see Belvedere play. Nothing against Belvedere, of course, but, like, you know, they're from Calgary
and
they're friends of ours, and it's sort of like I would love to see Belvedere play and I love watching Belvedere play, but maybe I'd like it just a little bit more if they were from Japan or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
Well,
like,
you'd feel more compelled to see it because you'd be less likely to see it again.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So I just think there's maybe a little bit of that when a band from Canada goes to Europe and the fans over there are kind of like, well, wow, this is a band from Canada. Let's check this out, you know? So
absolutely.
One other factor is just like the proximity of like countries. It's ludicrous to somebody who's from Canada. I mean, you can drive 14 hours in Canada and encounter two cities if you drive along the Trans-Canada. Like, and that's crazy, you know. We had a band, some friends from Holland who came over here once, and they're like, so where's the next show? And, oh, it's in Medicine Hat. And they're like, how far is that? And we're like, 3 hours. And they're like, so far? it's like Medicine Hat is actually pretty close.
Mm-hmm.
You're not going to Winnipeg or Vancouver, you know. And when we got over there, you really get to see why they might react that way, because they can literally drive 3 hours and be in three different countries.
Mm-hmm.
It's a whole different thing. And so you get to experience different kinds of scenes and different cultures in a very short amount of time, relatively.
Mm-hmm.
And that's pretty cool.
Are there any countries that you haven't been to the past two times that you're hoping to catch this third time around, if you can?
I don't think so.
Mm-hmm. I mean, our first trip actually saw us hit a lot of countries.
I mean,
I think most bands who go to Europe the first time don't really go to that many places. So that was pretty cool. I mean, the places that I'd like to go that I haven't been, I mean, apart from everywhere, I would say Scandinavia, but Scandinavia is a tough one because it's pretty far away from everything,
mm-hmm.
relative. And, you know, there's not, like, there's a few places to play. You have to justify the expense. I mean, you're already justifying a huge expense flying over and renting the equipment and renting the van and all of that. It gets prohibitively expensive just doing that in the radius of Central and Western Europe.
But I'd definitely
love to.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
Norway and Sweden.
Fabulous countries.
Finland.
I'd like us to go to the UK, too. I think that would be fun. Just even like in, because there's a lot of history there that I think that we all can relate to, and on a personal level would just have fun to see whether we play there or not.
Mm-hmm.
It's expensive to go there,
yeah,
so we should probably try to get a show. But
the word is it's the most expensive country to tour in Europe,
mm-hmm.
by far, hands down, far and away. So that is a very strong I guess, deterrent, but it's definitely a place I'd like to go. I actually have all the paperwork together to get my UK passport, so I'm hoping that I can put that together.
And then I'll, dual as
then
well?
I'll be able to, yeah, well, yeah. Then I'd be a dual citizen as well. Yeah.
Nice.
Hopefully.
You can drive all the gear across the border.
Totally.
Yeah.
You'll meet you there.
You'll take the train through the channel.
Yeah.
Those are the best. Is there anything that you would like to add to the end of our interview about potential or anything to add to anything, really?
Just that you're awesome and the grind's awesome and Chris McBurney is awesome and thanks for coming.
Absolutely. Cool. It's always a pleasure.
Yeah, thanks. Thank you so much. Take a listen to the record.
Mm-hmm. I highly recommend it. Potential is set to be released on September 13th of 2013. Please come and check out the show if you're in Calgary area at Dickens Pub.
The last song we heard was Point Changes in a Defined System, and we're going to leave it off with one last brand new cut from Potential, Damages.